Come one, come all, to the show where former pro football stars tell their stories. Plus the 12th man segment with Sports One Marketing. It's all right here, right now, on Thursday Night Tailgate. With your hosts, Chris Mascaro and Bob Lazzari.
Hey, good evening, everybody, and thank you for joining us tonight on Thursday Night Tailgate, the only weekly tailgate party where there are never any mosquitoes, the humidity is never an issue, and where you'll always find great guests from the NFL Alumni Association, plus celebrities from around the entertainment business. And the only thing we ask you to do is sit back and enjoy it. I'm your host, Chris Mascaro, and tonight we have an amazing guest list to share with you, so relax. Settle in. Let us take your mind off everything else going on in your life for the next couple of hours. Before we get started, let's kick off the show the very best way possible, and that's by bringing in my co-host, Mr. Bob Lazzari. Bob, how's it going tonight up in Eastern Connecticut, my friend?
Doing very well up here, Chris. How about you?
Oh, fantastic. You kidding me? Weather today, you know, you were saying off air, weather really nice up there. You had one of the best days of the year. We had a beautiful day here in Atlanta, Georgia, not a cloud in the sky. We're probably a little hotter than you. We got up into the mid-80s, but seeing that this time of year, we're typically, you know, pushing 90, 95, we'll take it.
Well, this is a strange type of the year up here, Chris. Last weekend until early this week, we had mid-80s. And then last night it went in down, ducked into the 30s again. That's New England. It was in the 30s. But today, yeah, I can't complain. 75, not a cloud in the sky, zero humidity, no wind. One of the five best days. You get about five here in New England a year that you don't forget, and May 14th will be one of them.
Good for you, my friend. And Bob, before we get into the guts of the show, I want to get a couple of quick thoughts from you. And you can't turn around twice without hearing about Deflategate and all the punishments and this and that and the other thing. Curious, what's the general feel up there in New England?
Well, of course, here in New England, Chris, we're bombarded by it constantly. We live in the middle of it, and of course, the fans up here are very non-apologetic, and they're all pro-New England, so you're going to get a skewed view from the people around here. I mean, just today, of course, the Players Association filed the appeal on the behalf of the Patriots. Not that the fact that he didn't cheat, Chris, it was that the punishment didn't fit the crime, and I think that's probably where the NFL is taking the most hits here. We constantly hear back to the Ray Rice getting only a couple games for his indiscretion, should we call, and of course now Brady getting a stiffer penalty in a way. So I think I don't think anybody, and you and I discussed this the other night, you know, the whole thing is people have cheated for such a long time, and you know, there's no question that the Patriots, this isn't the first time they've cheated. And as good as Brady is, he's a Hall of Fame quarterback. Boomer Esiason has called him the greatest quarterback ever. He's going to go down in history as a cheater. But as you said, you know, a lot of people do it to get an edge. You know, when we were kids, we would be embarrassed to be caught cheating. Now they call it getting an edge. But they cheated. Not that it was going to make a difference in beating up on the Colts that day. But who's to say they didn't do it many more times before that, Chris?
Right.
I have a sour taste in my mouth, but the NFL's got to get a little more consistent with their fines. I think you and I are on the same page with that.
Yeah, and that's sort of, you know, my take as well, Bob. You know, I don't mind, or, you know, I mean, I think the Patriots need to be punished. And to your point, and what's you know, got to come out now is, you know, the punishment does need to fit this crime. Now, I think, you know, the Patriots are sort of being you know, piled on here because of some of the, you know, previous, you know, indiscretions, you know, the spy gates of the world, and, you know, things of that nature, and maybe a little bit about organizational arrogance for what has gone on. So I think Roger Goodell has tried to, you know, kind of wrap all of that up together with you know, all these things that he's, you know, come down on. And I think on some level too, he's sort of hedging his bet, right? Because we all know every single penalty is going to have an appeal, and the appeal is going to knock it down. So I think, you know, you sort of got to inflate it to get what you really wanted, right? You throw the four games, you throw the two draft picks out there, knowing that, you know, that's going to come down. So you want it to come down to, like, in any negotiation, right? You start high, you go in with meat on the bone, and you know it's going to come back. And so I think that's, you know, some of what he's also doing is sort of hedging his bet, figuring, all right, what I really think is right is two games, but because I know it's going to get appealed and come down, I'm going to go four games, and then I'm going to go both of these draft picks, knowing that one of them is probably going to go away, and it'll meet there in the middle.
Yeah, we have to just stay away from Gates up here. Deflate Gates, Spy Gates. Gronkowski has a birthday, I think today or tomorrow. I hope he doesn't do anything crazy, so we'll hear about Gronk Gate. But yeah, we heard enough Gates up here in New England. We have enough in the rural settings. We don't need any more Gates, so let's stop this.
There you go. Hey, Bob, one other thing I want to kind of get your thoughts on. Should Giants fans and Odell Beckham and his family be worried now that he's on the cover of Madden 16 with the looming Madden curse?
Well, we know the curse of SI, the Madden curse, Chris. Let's hope not, you know, because it looks like on paper this team is finally going to be ready to win something. I mean, their offense is a juggernaut now, and let's hope that isn't a curse. I hope he stays healthy because, man, what he just showed us a little bit of last year, the only thing that would really stop him would be an injury, Chris. So let's hope this Madden gate – or Madden – see, I'm already saying gate already. See that? Your fault, Chris. Yeah, let's hope the whole Madden thing doesn't do anything like that. He is a special athlete.
Yeah, and there's no question he's a special wide receiver. So, yeah, I'm sort of looking forward to seeing what the kid can do in his second year, because what we saw towards the middle and end of the first year was, to your point, very special. All right, folks, TNT is brought to you by former Bengals and Falcons tight end Reggie Kelly and the great folks over at Kaivin Foods. Be sure to spice up everything on your menu by adding Kaivin's salsas, sauces, and spices to what you've got cooking. Check them out online at kaivin82.com. And Kaivin is K-Y-V-A-N, the number 82.com, to see all of their great products. We're also sponsored by Dr. Peter Candelora and the great folks over at Coastal Ortho. Does it hurt when you get out of bed in the morning, folks? If you're simply living with joint pain, stop. Do what the Gridiron Greats do to get relief, and that's contact Coastal Orthopedics. For more information, check them out online at bone-dr.com. Baseball season well underway now. If you love the game, you need to check out the Louisville Slugger Museum and Factory. If you haven't been, you really got to go. You get to go into that factory and actually watch the bats that your favorite major league stars are going to be stepping to the plate with. They're made right there in front of you. You get to walk the actual live production line and see the full process going on. And they're going to let you know whose bats those are. To find out more information and to book your summer vacation trip up there, go to sluggermuseum.com. And we also want to give a shout out to our friends over at the Gridiron Greats organization. They're doing great things to help take care of the guys who played long before there were 6 or 7 figure salaries or even healthcare coverage. They've got a wonderful event coming up next month. It's an evening with the greats. You're going to see Mike Ditka, Mean Joe Green, Fred Biletnikoff, Ted Mack, Dick Vermeil, Jimbo Covert, Jim McMahon, and many other great former players. It's a Hall of Fame dinner and a golf outing. It's going to be Friday, June 12th and Saturday, June 13th at the Silverton Casino and Hotel up in Las Vegas. It's going to be a great event. For more information, go to gridirongreats.org/Hall of Fame. All right, tonight, who do we got with us tonight? Well, first up in our 12th man segment, you know, our great friend, Sports One Marketing CEO and best-selling author David Meltzer is going to join us. We'll check out what he's got going at MeltzerMission.com. And Meltzer, M-E-L-T-Z-E-R, MeltzerMission.com, new site that David has got out there, a 30-day plan, you know, to say thank you and appreciate the people in your lives. Check it out. Great stuff comes out every single day from that site. Again, MeltzerMission.com. We'll catch up with David here in just a few minutes. Following Dave, we start down the path of what is a Wisconsin-flavored night here on TNT. We got a couple of former Wisconsin Badgers and a Wisconsin resident joining us tonight. The first Badger also is a former Packers guard and a great friend of ours, Bill Ferrario. Bill's been a great guest with us several times over the years. He always has such great stories to share. Maybe we can get a word of advice from him from our recent guest, Matt Rotherham, former University of Pitt guard. He was he was signed as an undrafted free agent by the Packers. So maybe he has a word of advice for Matt on what he needs to do to make the team. Plus, we'll get an update on the other things Bill's working on. Got a health business that he's a part of. So Bill will be here about 20 minutes from now. He'll be followed by two great guests who are going to join us at the same time. They're working together now, and that's former Bills linebacker Shane Nelson and former Rams Pro Bowl guard Kent Hill. And Kent, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, started a cookie company. You've heard us talk about it in the past. Want to remind you about it. Kent's Country Cookies, the best cookies you're ever going to eat. I promise you. I bought a box, brought it into the office today, gone in 2 minutes. Check them out online, kentscountrycookies.com. We'll catch up to both he and Shane when they join us about 35 minutes from now. Later this hour, we'll be joined by former Penn State and New York Jets running back Blair Thomas. Blair was a first-round draft pick, played in the league for 7 years as a former Jet. I bet he's got a thing or two to say about Deflategate. And Blair is also a volunteer instructor for Football University, which is an organization that runs football camps across the country. And by the country, I mean the whole country. A few years ago, he was a part of a team of instructors that did a camp up in Barrow, Alaska. For those not familiar with Barrow, it's above the Arctic Circle. We'll talk about that and more when Blair joins us about 50 minutes from now. Then we'll kick off the next hour with former Badgers and 49ers linebacker Chris Borland. You know Chris from the great season he had last year with the 49ers, which was followed by his abrupt decision to retire from the game at age 24. We'll talk about what led to that decision, plus what might be next for Chris when he joins us a little over an hour from now. And then we'll wrap up the show with former Dolphins and Jets defensive back and resident of Wisconsin 8 months out of the year, and that's Kerry Glenn. Kerry is never short on opinions, which is why we love him so much on this show. I'm sure he, too, has some thoughts on the punishment handed down to Tom Brady and the Patriots. Plus, his former teams, the Jets and the Dolphins, are on path, we want to check with him on which of those two teams, the Jets or Dolphins, he thinks are on the right path to getting back in the playoffs. Those two teams square off over in London this year. So week 4, they play over in London, and there's a Jets and Dolphins alumni golf tournament going on. So Kerry will be a part of. So we'll hear about that and much more when he joins us about 90 minutes from now. So as always, we are wall to wall with great guests for you here on Thursday Night Tailgate. And we thank you for making the choice to listen to this show and taking the journey with us here tonight. But let's get the ball rolling like we do every single week by saluting our brave men and women serving in our military and listening in on the Armed Forces Radio Network. We want to pass on our sincere thanks to all our veterans and everyone currently serving in every branch of the military and public service. You folks are absolutely incredible for what you do for all of us. We thank you for the sacrifices you either made as a veteran or you're making now for every one of us. We truly appreciate what you did or what you do to protect the freedoms that we all have and the liberty that we have that provides the rest of us the opportunity to do what we do. Our sincere thanks as well to Sean Cruz and all the folks over at Armed Forces Radio. It's an honor for us to have Thursday Night Tailgate be a part of your network. You can find our show by going to armedforcesradionetwork.org. And for the veterans listening in tonight, be sure to check out globalvoiceforveterans.org. It's a great site with a wealth of information for our veterans. You got news, articles specifically geared for veterans out there. I'm sure you're going to find that information both interesting and beneficial. Again, check out globalvoiceforveterans.org. I also want to remind everyone some of the other places you can find our show. You can stream or download us for free from our site, ThursdayNightTailgate.com. Plus, our friends over at Boost Radio are streaming our show every Friday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Go to BoostRadioNetwork.com and click on the on-air link that you're going to find in the upper right-hand corner of their homepage to hear us. You can also find us on iHeartRadio, TuneIn.com, Spreaker, SoundCloud, iTunes, and we're very excited about our new partnership with Audio Boom. You can find us there by going to audioboom.com and then click on sport in the left-hand side and then NFL. And you can take us with you everywhere you go on your mobile device by downloading the Stitcher or player.fm app as well. Before we get to our 12th man segment with David Meltzer, let's hear from Joe Lajanusa about our friends over at Kyven Foods, brought to you by former Bengals and Falcons tight end Reggie Kelly.
Add great flavor to your next tailgate party with Kyven Salsas. Former NFL tight end Reggie Kelly created these salsas for dipping chips and much more. In hot and mild flavors, Kuiven salsas make a great marinade. They are terrific in meatloaf and are super toppers for everything from baked potatoes to scrambled eggs. It's a great ingredient to enjoy in a variety of family favorite meals. And some people say Kuiven salsa is a meal to itself. With all the possibilities, Kuiven is truly salsa with soul. Kuiven salsas are also made from natural ingredients, and they are preservative-free. So look for Kuiven, that's K-Y-V-A-N, at area Walmart stores or online. Click on the Kuiven logo on our website to check retail and online locations. More information at Kuiven82.com.
If you want to wow your guests at your next house party or your next tailgate party, be sure to serve them plenty of Kuiven foods, salsas, sauces, and spices to liven up everything you're going to put on your menu. Be sure to check out their recipes that you can find on our site, ThursdayNightTailgate.com, as well as their own site, Kuiven82.com. And again, Kuiven is K-Y-V-A-N, the number 82.com, and give them a like on Facebook. One taste, and you're going to appreciate the goodness. All right, now joining us on the Kuiven Foods guest line in our weekly 12th Man segment is Sports One Marketing CEO and best-selling author David Meltzer. Good evening, Dave. How you doing, my friend?
I am terrific. How are you?
Oh, fantastic. Thank you.
So, all right,
Dave, I got to say, you know, right up at the top of this, that I've been really enjoying the daily emails from your site, MeltzerMission.com. The site's really fantastic. Talk about what you're doing with the Meltzer Mission.
Yeah, you know, we launched the Meltzer Mission in the 30-day gratitude challenge, and we'll have some other challenges as well. But gratitude's so important because it gives us perspective. You know, it sounds trite and simple, whether it be in sports or in life. You know, we see a glass as half full or half empty. That's a simple basis for what our realities are. And so I've created a website and a mission. I'm speaking around the country and even the world now in China and a few other places about gratitude and empathy. And we're actually launching an app next that gives you reminders to say thank you before you go to bed and when you wake up. And it also will have a wonderful thank you card application that allows you to thank other people as well. So we're really excited. The response has been tremendous. It's gone a little bit viral. I had a great week last week. I threw that first pitch out at the Angel game and posted it up to the scoreboard. I threw a knuckleball strike.
Is that right? I've been looking for the video. I wanted to see it. How did it go?
It went great. It's on YouTube, and they're giving me the official feed, so I'll be posting that on the website. And but it was phenomenal. We raised some money for the Crescent Moon Foundation, you know, Warren's Foundation, and it was a little bit nerve-wracking, but through that knuckleball strike with about 50 of my family and friends and associates there, if anyone ever has a chance, what a great life experience that was.
That's fantastic. Good for you, Dave. Dave, I wanted to get your thoughts on a couple of things tonight. We never get enough time with you on the show, but I'm curious, you know, the big topic of the week, and Bob and I were talking about it at the top, you know, obviously is the punishment being handed down to the Patriots for Deflategate. What's your take on what they got?
You know, I was hoping to have D. Smith was on with me tonight, and he's going to come back and come another night. But because of Tom Brady and their NFLPA appeal and all the things going on, he had to duck out at the very last minute. So he does send his apologies, and we're going to have him on to talk about the NFLPA side of Brady. My take is accountability, and where I'm disappointed in the whole process is that, you know, once again, these great athletes and great people, which Belichick and Brady and Robert Kraft, they all are just, I know them all, and they're wonderful, but they're human. And what happens is that we're teaching our youth that, you know, we are living in blame, shame, and justification. And, you know, I'm looking at the responses and, you know, this whole idea of non-accountability, and, you know, the crime itself is not that bad. And the part that is really damaging to the game is the lack of integrity and going below the line. So, you know, I just saw, you know, one of the responses about deflators, you know, the term deflators, and that was used in a text. and that didn't mean anything to do with deflating footballs. It had to do with something, you know, deflating emotion. It was just ridiculous. And then the whole sting operation, like the NFL faced this huge sting operation about their best marketable player who just won the Super Bowl. And, you know, it's just beyond me that, number one, when something like this happens, that we can't just be accountable and say, you know what, I wasn't sure the severity of that rule. They're trying to take advantage, and I understand that there's a punishment. We really didn't want to change the aspect of the game. I've deflated balls in the past when it's really cold, and you know, I wasn't either aware of the rule or I didn't know the significance of it, but in no way do I want to jeopardize the game, and I'll take there's a rule violation. But it's the cover-up, you know, that's really upsetting, and it's sending the wrong message to everyone that, you know, our first reaction is to hide and to go below the line. And it happened with the steroid issue. The guys that took accountability, they still have their brand, their image, and their reputation. And the other guys that went to denial, blame, shame, and justification, you know, have ruined their brand. And
right.
You know, it's truly a shame.
Yeah, no, and you know, that's, you know, that is the piece that, you know, you just wish that, you know, someone would finally just come out and go, you know what, you got me. And to your point, you know what, I didn't think it was that big a deal. We've been doing it for years, you know, because we've heard, right, you know, in the you know, as this has all sort of gotten churned up, we've heard, you know, Aaron Rodgers talk about how he likes to overinflate the ball. We hear Donovan McNabb talking about how he always used to, you know, mess with the balls, or he and the equipment staff there would mess with the balls. You know, we heard, you know, Jerry Rice come out and say how he, you know, put Stickum all over his gloves for years because he didn't. Everyone was doing it, to your point earlier. Everyone did it. I did that. So, I mean, you know, everyone, you know, Bob talked about in the beginning, you know, it's called getting an edge, right? We like to take cheating now. We don't like cheating. It was all about getting an edge, right? So, so much, you know, has come out now about, you know, people that sort of bent the rules or tried to get their edge. But, you know, if to your point, it would be nice if at one point somebody would just come out and go, you know what, you got me. I didn't think it was a big deal. I'm sorry. You know, I think it would be a news story for a day, not for days on end.
Yeah, and it just creates more, you know, all that energy, shortages, voids, obstacles that we manifest, they just create more of the same. So, you know, now you have the commissioner in a certain position and the owner in a position and the coach in a position, and everyone's losing. You know, you forget the money and the draft picks and the game suspension, the league is losing. And yet, want to have a shield with character, then let's create a positive way to deal with mistakes, because they're going to be made. These are young men and old men now too, but people are going to make mistakes. They're going to drink too much. They're going to try different things that are experimental, and they're going to get in trouble. They're going to try to get an edge. They're hyper-competitive individuals. It has nothing to do with money. They're hyper-competitive. So they're going to look for every edge they need to do, and I know that when they make these mistakes, they have to make people realize that these mistakes are human, and I ask for, number one, forgiveness, and two, I accept the punishment that I am accountable, and it won't happen again. And that would be right. A wonderful story. I'd love to talk about it someday. I know Andy Pettit, he was the closest that I know in the steroid era, to come out and say, look, I did it. Didn't know the significance of it. Here's the circumstances that I did it. But yes, I did it. And, you know, nobody talks about Andy Pettit when they talk about steroid user.
Right. Dave, before we let you go, where can our listeners, you know, find you? You talked about having, you know, going around the country and around the world. Where are you going to be next? And how can our folks potentially get a copy of your book, Connected to Goodness, signed?
Sure. So we're back on a little bit of the corporate speaking gig. So I'm going to be down in Dallas, and believe it or not, Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. We have some great stuff in Las Vegas as well. We're doing with Yahoo Sports in July, and we'll be at the Palazzo at Legace Stadium. So there's a lot of exciting things coming that way. Obviously, our website, thenutrition.com, the newest website. We still have connectedfitness.com. The book itself is still growing. We just accepted it into the airport, so you'll start seeing it when you're traveling. But Amazon, still a bestseller. If you go on Amazon.com, best place to get the book right now. Also available in Barnes & Noble. Really most concerned, if anyone got messaged to be grateful and empathetic, And I am most grateful for Bob and you to give me this platform to have great guests on, to inspire other people, not only to do the right things, but to do the right things when we don't do the right things, to be accountable, have effective communication, be grateful and empathetic. Most of all, make a lot of money, help a lot of people, and have a lot of fun. So, Chris, I just am ever indebted to you, and thank you so much for having me on.
Always, always a great pleasure to have you as part of the show, Dave. We look forward to catching up with you again next week. And in the meantime, all the best to you and everyone out at Sports One Marketing, Warren Moon, and all the great staff, because you have a fantastic staff at Sports One Marketing as well. So we look forward to next week, Dave. Thanks very much.
Have a great week. Thank you.
All our best.
All right. Thank you. Take care. David Meltzer. Again, his book, Connected to Goodness, Manifest Everything You Desire in Business and in Life. And if you haven't picked up yet, like he said, you can find it on Amazon.com. We're going to get to our next guest, Bill Ferrario, on the other side of this station identification.
This is Christine Lisi, and you're listening to Thursday Night Tailgate, where NFL stars go to tell their stories with Chris Mascaro and Bob Lazzari on the Armed Forces Radio Network.
Now back with us on the Kaivin Foods guest line is Bill Ferrario. Let me remind you about Bill's background. He's from Scranton, Pennsylvania, was a fourth-round draft pick out of Wisconsin in 2001 by the Green Bay Packers. He was an all-Big Ten and all-American guard at Wisconsin, where he paved the way for Heisman Trophy winner Ron Dayne. He started all 50 games during his college career, only the third Big Ten player in history to do that. He helped Wisconsin win back-to-back Rose Bowls in 1999 and 2000. Played in the NFL from 2001 to 2004 with the Packers, Redskins, and Panthers, and we're excited to have him back tonight with us on Thursday Night Tailgate. Hey, Bill, Chris, and Bob, how you doing, my friend?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing? Always a blast to be on the show.
Ah, appreciate that. Bill, it's sort of a Wisconsin night here on Thursday Night Tailgate. Later on, we're going to have Chris Borland, who is a Wisconsin alum, and Terry Glenn, who is a part-time resident now up in Wisconsin. But I wanted to kind of get your thoughts quickly on Chris's decision to retire after one really good season with the 49ers. What do you think about his decision to do that?
You know what? I'm sure it's an extremely tough decision to make, but I think it's a decision that's going to be considered by a lot of players more and more. I think with Chris's in particular situation, I personally don't know many of the details, but I'm sure there are quite a few details that the general public doesn't know that played a factor in that decision. I'm sure it wasn't an easy one. I'm sure it was one that he thought long and hard about, and it was probably really tough for him to make. I know just as a fan, as a fellow UW alum, you know, it was sad to hear that that's the way he had to go or chose that he wanted to go, because he was a heck of a player, just a phenomenal player to watch. But obviously he's making the best decision for himself and his future. So I wish him the best.
There you go. Bill, Matt Rotherham joined us a few weeks ago. Matt's a 6'5", 320-pound guard out of Pitt. He signed as an undrafted free agent with the Packers. I'm just curious, you know, on Matt's behalf, if you will, what kind of advice would you give a guy like Matt for, you know, how to make an impression on the Packers coaching staff and how he may go about trying to make that Packers team?
You know, I think you could simplify it as far back as what dads say to kids when they're going out for a high school team. You don't ever want to have a coach to tell you to hustle or to get lined up. You don't ever want to say to somebody, keep going harder. You want to play whistle to whistle. You just always, every opportunity you have, which at the NFL level, whether it's camps or training camp, you don't, even though it's a long, drawn out process, everybody doesn't always get a ton of reps. So every rep you get, whether it's a mental rep watching from behind the play or actually in the offense running the play, you have to take full advantage of every opportunity, because you don't know which one's going to be your last one, and you need to just make a significant impact on that play in that practice. So those coaches have a tough decision to make when it comes cut time or when they start shaving down that roster. You just make it really tough for them to say no when your name comes up.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, as a fourth round draft pick, when you were signed by the Packers and started your playing career, what was it like for you the very first time you showed up at training camp, and what did you do to try to capture the eye of the coaching staff back then?
You know, I think even myself being a humble guy, I think that the most challenging thing was, you know, like how you mentioned that stat, which I'm proud of in college, of all the games I started, you know, it was going back to early high school when I wasn't a starter. Now all of a sudden you go to the NFL and it's the first time in 4 years where, you know, you're really not a nobody, but you're not one of the main guys on the team. And I just, you know, I remember what my dad said to me, and he said it to me again when I went to the NFL. He's like, hey, you do what you got to do to make this team. And I remember my rookie year, if they called for somebody on kickoff, I ran out on kickoff. If they called for somebody on punt, I ran out on punt. And when I went out there during the offensive line segment of practice, you know, the NFL, no matter who wants to admit it or not, there's a lot of the term brother-in-law, where you take it easy on certain guys, and sometimes vets don't want to go hard, and this during early practices. And I just remember having conversations with the guys saying, hey, I know I'm probably going to upset you, and I hope we could shake hands after practice and be okay in the locker room, but I got to do what I got to do to make this team. I'm not, you know, if I take it easy on you, I'm the one that's getting cut, and you're going to be here come Sunday because you're a starter. So I just had that mentality that I got to work hard for myself. And that's what any undrafted free agent all the way up to, you know, a high round pick. I think, you know, it's not uncommon. I remember when I was in Green Bay, I believe we cut a fourth round offensive lineman, my second or third year in Green Bay. So it happens. I mean, and it's not necessarily, here's where it gets tricky in the NFL. It's not necessarily how good or bad you are, but it's the team as a whole. Maybe a defensive back got hurt right before the last cut, so now they got to add another DB. Well, where are they going to take away that other position? It might be the offensive line that typically carries a high number of guys. So you're not always fighting for your own job against your own team, against your own position. You're also fighting the numbers game, which isn't always visible. And that's what a lot of the time sneaks up and gets people when they're not expecting it, when that defensive back goes down or D-line goes down, and then all of a sudden the number 10 offensive lineman gets cut or the number 9 offensive lineman gets cut. So that's what you don't see coming, and that's why you just got to put it all out there on every single play.
Wow, that's a great point. Bob, questions for Bill?
Hi, Bill. Back to the Wisconsin days, Bill. I watched Ron Dayne here up in New York as soon as he got out of Wisconsin. Of course, you blocked for him in college, and he set all kinds of records there, Heisman Trophy, Bill, and everything. And then when he got to the pros, of course, I don't know if it was the system, Bill, or whatever. Did you, like I, think he would have a much better pro career? I mean, he played 8 years. That's probably more than your average running back. We were a little bit surprised that he didn't at least get to carry the ball more.
You know, I was surprised the way things turned out, but I think I was more surprised the way teams viewed him and teams tried to use him. And it's funny you bring this up. I was actually just with Ron probably about 4 or 5 weeks ago. We went to an event and we were in the car together for about an hour and a half. And on the ride back, you know, I brought it up and I was like, I hope I'm not stirring up any bad emotions here, but I'm like, what the heck happened with New York? And we went team by team in every situation. And I looked at him and I was the first one to say, what were they thinking just giving you the ball on third and fourth down or just giving you 10 carries a game? I understand at the NFL level, you know, Ron Dayne was a special breed when college football and even back in NFL, all they did was run the ball. I understand Ron would get 40 plus carries a game in college, and there's no way you could do that at the NFL level. But a guy like Ron Dayne doesn't even start working up a sweat till around carry 14 or 15. So you got to feed him the rock if you want to get those carries. And, you know, I think that's what was sort of missing. They expected the 120 to 160 yard games off of, you know, 8 to 13 carries a game. And that if you look back at Ron's college career, you know, I don't have the stats in front of me, but I feel pretty safe in saying that he never rushed for over 100 yards with under, say, 17 or 18 carries. So you need to give him that ball. And the more you give it to him, usually the more he wears down defenses, and the better and bigger the runs start getting come the second half. So it just surprised me, the low number of carries. And, I mean, it was a tough situation for him with Tiki Barber was having issues when they drafted Ron. Then all of a sudden, I think Tiki Barber put super glue on his forearms to hold on to the football and not fumble anymore once Ron got there, because that was sort of Ron's in. You know, Tiki was having problems. He was on his way out. It was going to be Ron's game, and then Tiki just stopped fumbling the football. So that didn't help Ron either. But, you know, over the years, you know, he did have 8 years, which that's very respectable. He did have some big games. Like I was talking to him in the car about, I remember watching him with Houston. He had a big game. I don't know if it was a playoff game, but it was towards the end of the season, I think, where he rushed for, I want to say, around 120, 130 yards. That just impressed me later on in his career. That's where they gave him more carries. He got more yards. I always had the disconnect why every NFL coach didn't understand that. We need to give him the ball more if we want more yards out of him.
I totally agree, Bill. Up here in New England and in the New York area, the fans don't even think of him as a quote-unquote bust. They said that's not the kind of back he was when they'd give him the ball on third and fourth down and expect him to bowl guys over all the time. He didn't do that in college. I mean, it was just sad to see. It was
tough for the situation that he went in. How good he was in college, and you knew the potential was there for the NFL, and that it just didn't happen.
I always thought it was sad. And yourself, Bill, you did get to play in one of the most revered shrines of all time, and Lambeau Field is beyond, and I'm sure it's going to be hard for you to answer this question, but the first time you came out of the tunnel onto that field, did you have goosebumps? What was the feeling like?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, I had the honor not only to have been in the state through my college years to really get an appreciation of the Packers, but I had also the honor of, when I went to Green Bay in 2001, the stadium and the locker rooms were still, the stadium was still all green the way it was in the 60s. The locker rooms we dressed in had the same lockers that they had back in the 60s and 70s. And then I was there for the renovation. So I was one of those few players that got to sit in both locker rooms. So, you know, I just feel special being a part of that I was in the locker room that Fuzzy Thurston, Jerry Kramer, Bart Starr, all those guys were in, including many, many other Green Bay Packers. But then walking on that field, you know, the only thing I was able to remotely compare it to in my career was the moment I went to my first Rose Bowl and the blacktop stopped and the grass was about to start. And I remember walking out with my offensive line right before the game, and we all stopped and we took about 2 seconds. Nobody said anything to anybody, and we just all stopped on our own because we all sort of realized the next step you take, you know, you're sort of stepping into history where just great games were played, many great players have gone on to. And I think walking on the Lambeau Field was that times 10 with knowing the history behind it, and now being able to say to my kids and my family and just anybody I talk to that, you know, I was a part of that. And it's a tremendous honor, let alone the guys I played with, Brett Favre, who's getting inducted into the Packer Hall of Fame this summer, which that's already making the state go insane that he's coming back. I heard we just sold 67,000 tickets in Lambeau Stadium to watch his induction on a video screen. So that tells you right there how crazy Green Bay Packer fans are and how diehard they are for their team.
Yeah, and that's a great point. I know, Bill, you got to go. So, the last thing I wanted to talk to you about was that. And, you know, for folks that aren't aware, it's on Saturday, July 18th, that he's going to be inducted into the Packers Hall of Fame. They'll retire his number 4. And they did, sold out 67,000 seats at $4 a pop just to watch that event on TV. So I guess all is good now between the Packers front office and Packer Nation and Brett Favre. Thursday night, Thanksgiving night, right, is when the Packers play the Bears, and that's when his number and name are going to go up on Lambeau Field. But just curious, you know, are you surprised everything is sort of, you know, kumbaya now between all parties involved? Are you going to be there for the ceremony in either July or November?
Oh, I'll definitely be out there, you know, especially in July. It'll be something fun to be out and run into all the guys. I knew it was going to happen eventually. I think as a player, a lot of the players said, it's going to happen. It has to happen. The only thing that was going to delay it was unnecessary conversations. And every once in a while, if we look back at the past, whether it was intentional or unintentional, there were a couple comments that came out. In my personal opinion, those comments were skewed, but there were just quotes that sounded funny that I think were misinterpreted. And just every time something happened, it delayed it a little bit longer. And I think the smartest thing on both sides, it just really seemed like there was a good year, 2 years where there was no talk about it. The only talk was it's going to happen soon, but not right now. Brett didn't say anything. The Packers really didn't say anything. And I think it was just, you know, that along with the actual current Green Bay Packer team is having success. Aaron is having beyond success right now, Aaron Rodgers. And I think all that put together just made for a great situation and gave us that opportunity to say, okay, it's time to bring him back. Brett's excited about it. The Packers are excited about it. And 99.9% of Packer fans, I truly believe, are excited about it.
Bill, before you run off, I know you've got a new health business that has gotten off the ground. Why don't you let our listeners know a little more information about that and how they can follow you both online and over social media?
I do. So with any of this information or just to follow me, I'm on Facebook, I'm on Twitter, I'm on Instagram and LinkedIn. And just really about 10 years after my retirement, I got out of shape, stopped working out, was nowhere near eating right, and got with a great program right now. And it's something that follow me or connect with me and we could talk about it. But basically in 9.5 weeks, I've lost 54 pounds. I have not been hungry. I got more energy than I ever have in my life. And I actually never thought I'd be that guy to put a picture online, but I have taken before and after photos, and they even blow my mind that it's actually the actual picture and just how good I feel. So, you know, it was definitely about time. And I knew, you know, I have two kids and, you know, I'm and a beautiful wife, and, you know, I know it's for them now. It's not, you know, I had my time where it was for me earlier on, and now it's time to take care of myself for my family. So I'm around for my family. And, you know, right now I'm just feeling good, enjoying life, enjoying this program, which is easy to follow. Like I said, it's not a, you know, I do joke with people saying I stopped eating food 3 months ago, but it's not the truth. I am eating. I am, you know, I'm still a lineman. I have to eat. But yeah, it's not one of those starvation diets. It's not, it's just eating healthier food. It's just being smart about things. And yeah, it's been working great for me. So anybody that's interested, I'm more than happy to talk to them about it. And I've been happy with that. But yeah, other than that, I'm just cheering on my Badgers out here in Wisconsin, excited for the Packers, excited with their last draft class, and excited that you guys got some Badgers on the show together tonight. I can't wait to hear what Chris Boylan has to say. I know a lot of his Badger fans are excited to listen to him and hear how he's doing now and what potentially is the next chapter in his life.
There you go. Bill, it's always so much fun having you as part of the show. Thank you for taking time out of your night to join us again. You're fantastic.
Thank you guys very much. I always love being on the show. So thanks a lot I'm glad I still get the invite. So thank you guys very much.
All right, Bill, all the best to you and your family. We'll catch up again.
Have a good night, guys. All right.
You too. Bye. Bill Ferrario, former Packers and Badgers offensive guard. You know, Bob, they don't come better and nicer than Bill Ferrario.
Yeah, no, it's amazing, Chris. I was, if we talk to him again, I was going to ask him. You know, he was a big guy when he played, 315 pounds or so. And, you know, after you retire, you can go either way. Some guys take a lot of that weight off from not lifting and maybe not eating as much, or they can go the other way. And very interesting how he's turned things around, and he sounds like his life is going very well right now.
There you go. All right, now back with us on the Kyven Foods guest line are two of our favorite guests and guys who have been wonderful supporters of the show, and that's former Bills linebacker Shane Nelson and former Rams Pro Bowl guard Ken Hill. Let me remind you a little bit about both of their backgrounds. Shane is from Mathis, Texas. He was an undrafted free agent out of Baylor who actually got discovered at a Dallas Cowboys open tryout and was the only player out of about 1,800 who showed up that day to be offered a contract, which he turned down, by the way. He played in the NFL from 1977 to 1982 with the Buffalo Bills, where he was a part of their famed Bermuda Triangle defense along with Fred Smirlus and Jim Haslett. Kent was a first-round draft pick, the 26th selection overall by the Los Angeles Rams in 1979 out of locally here, Georgia Tech. Was named the Rams Rookie of the Year in 79. He was a five-time Pro Bowl selection. He is a member of the Georgia Tech Hall of Fame and the Georgia Sports Hall of Fame and his company. Like you heard me say at the top of the show, Kent's Country Cookies, best cookies on the planet. And we gave a box away today at the office, and those things were gone in about 2 seconds. So, and we are certainly glad to have both guys here and back with us on Thursday Night Tailgate. Good evening, fellas.
Great to be here, guys.
Hey, glad to be here. Thank you for having us.
And I'm surprised they lasted only a few seconds. I mean, these cookies are unbelievable.
Yeah.
They really are. I'm telling you, I've said it for years now that they are the best cookies on the planet. And I mean that sincerely, not because Ken's been on the show, because, you know, I've had many of them, and they are absolutely out of this world.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. You have to get Bill some of them after he gets to his goal. We can give him some of those. So he can
now that he's trim.
Yeah.
There you go. Fellas, before we talk about anything on the field, you know, you guys are working together now. You guys have been traveling the country now for the last couple of years. Update our listeners on what you guys are doing together.
Well, we're in Sacramento County right now working with the county government department, and we do team and leadership development. We got some really incredible things happening and a lot of positive energy going here in California. And was just in Georgia a couple of weeks ago with camp. We're working with DeKalb County there in Georgia. So we have a good time together, and it's just fun to be a part of helping organizations maximize their potential.
Yeah, we love what we do, and it's a great way to help people personally and professionally on the way to helping an organization be more effective.
That's fantastic. Shane, I'm not sure any team has gone through a bigger transition this offseason than your Bills, having brought in Rex Ryan, plus trading for Shady McCoy, bringing in Matt Castle to compete with EJ Jr. Also, you got Percy Harvin and Richie Incognito. Give us your assessment of what the Bills have done.
I'm really excited. I know kind of Rex, he kind of wore out his welcome in New York toward the end. But, you know, Rex is I love the guy's confidence. He brings an expertise with defense, and last year the defense, I think they were fourth in the NFL in defense, and that should even get better this year. I just think they've done a lot of really good things, and we're excited. It's nice that the Bills were bought and kept in Buffalo. That's been a positive note for everybody who loves the Buffalo Bills. So from a fan standpoint, I'm excited about the opportunities before us.
Are you happy with Rex Ryan as the head coach? You know, he tends to say some things to make you sort of cringe and roll your eyes a little bit. That's certainly not the type of coach when you kind of think back to the Marv Levy days. And, you know, he's certainly a big change from that.
You know, I think that Buffalo will love that swagger. And, you know, Rex isn't afraid to express himself and speak his mind. I just think he's a good fit. He's coming off a disappointment. I know he didn't goal set to finish with the Jets and not have a winning program. So I really think he probably sees this as his last stop. And I think he's going to have the extra burners on to finish it right. And I really feel it's a good fit. And I've talked to a lot of teammates, and we all feel the same way, that, you know, we think Rex could be the one to help us get back in the playoffs and get back to a football team that can compete on a week-by-week basis.
Kent, your alma mater, Georgia Tech, had a heck of a season last year in the ACC, 11-3, beat Mississippi State in the Capital One Bowl. You've got Notre Dame and all sort of the usual suspects in the ACC, like Florida State, Miami, Virginia Tech, of course, Georgia on the schedule at the end of the year. How do you feel about how your Georgia Tech team is looking for 2015?
Absolutely aesthetic with what they did last year. And just to go back there and recap that, what was the last one you said, the last team you said that would be?
University of Georgia, that one?
Yeah. Oh, hey. Yeah, we just need to say that one more time. Yeah. Very excited about that. I mean, it's just it was really really well timed for a coach too, but it's the place I think we should be there more often, and so I'm just glad to see us now. The only way we can get there is at least have a first time, and so hopefully it's a place that Georgia Tech folks in general, not only just the team, but us in general, have an expectation that we ought to be in the conversation about the best in the country. And that's a mindset, that's an expectation, and it's one we ought to have. We don't have any reason to expect anybody to be better than us. I mean, heck, we got Atlanta, Georgia. Nobody else can say that, really. To help us recruit players. We got a great great school, great academics. What's not to like about it? So we ought to be in that conversation every year, and I'm just glad we were this time.
So
I don't know. You know, Chris, I'm not sure, but I think Baylor finished higher in the rankings than Georgia.
Oh, my goodness.
I just thought I'd throw that out there.
So Kent, with all that sort of chest beating over the win over Georgia, now your Rams' number one pick was Todd Gurley out of Georgia. How do you feel about now reconciling and rooting for him when you rooted so hard against him?
Well, you know what? I mean, I'm glad to see him go there. I mean, that kid is definitely something special.
Yeah.
And so you gotta like that no matter who he's working for, you know. And so I'm all for what he'll do. I think he'll be a great success there. I mean, if you just look at the way that kid plays, you know, he can do that. He's got a recipe that'll work anywhere. And so I'm expecting great success for him there, and certainly want that for my Rams.
All right. Bob, questions for Shane and Kent?
Yeah, sure. First, hey, guys, and Shane, first, when you started in 77, Shane, I remember you coming up, and once you got into the lineup for Buffalo, you stayed there for a long time. You had that kind of Iron Man-type quality up in Buffalo, and I was just wondering, was it a different mindset back then, Shane? There was probably days when you were in the lineup you didn't want to lose your job when you were out there and you played hurt. I'm sure you can probably remember that long streak of games you played consecutively. There's probably some games you probably shouldn't have been out there.
You know, I think toward the end, you know, looking back, when I really got the first knee injury in 1981 against Cleveland, when I got my knee dinged up, should have probably had surgery then. But we were off, you know, we had a great team. We're coming off a great season in 1980. You know, if you're team captain, you know, there's an extra responsibility feeling like that I need to be out there for my teammates. And that was kind of the culture. Looking back, I probably should have just taken time off. But, you know, an ACL, MCL, and all that kind of surgery, that total reconstruction, that was not an art or a science that it is now. It was almost a deal killer. It took 18 months to get back on the field for most players, and some never, if you were lucky.
Yeah.
And, you know, so it is what it is. You know, I'm proud of the fact that I came in undrafted, started every game of my career, was voted by my teammates, MVP, got to be team captain. So I have a lot to be thankful for. And, you know, it's kind of like Earl Campbell. You know, a lot of people said Earl could have played longer if he had taken, you know, a few steps out of bounds and not taken so many hits. But, you know, he wouldn't have been Earl Campbell if he ran different. So, you know, we all have a style that we approach, and it's all in and that's all out. That's kind of how I approach the game. And looking back, I'm so thankful to be a part of it. We had two great teams. And like I say, 1980, we had number one defense in the league. So we got to be a part and do some exciting things. And Buffalo Bills fans are the best. You know, I know every team says that about that, but these guys are loyal. You know, in the tough days, there weren't a lot of people in the stands in 1977, but when Knox came and brought in consistency as a coach, and Tom Catlin, one of the best defensive coordinators of his day, really knew how to put the schemes together. We had some great players. When we drafted Jim Haslett and Fred Smillers in 79, we teamed up to do some really incredible things. And so, you know, it's all good, you know, and it this is what it is. At that time, that kind of knee injury was, you know, pretty much of a deal killer.
Yeah, and more about Buffalo, Shane. I mean, I keep telling Chris, we just got through with one of the more brutal winters ever here in New England, and you spent 6 years up in Buffalo, and up there, our winter would be normal up there. So I'm sure you probably remember some incredible games and weather up there that you probably don't miss too much.
Oh, gosh. You know, we were playing, I think it was Denver in 1979, and the first half we had a sunny day. It was about 48, 50 degrees. We knew there was a storm coming over the lake, and just before the end of the first half, the wind blew in, flurries started, and we played the whole second half. You couldn't even see the field with snow. So, But being in Buffalo, you learn how to use that to your advantage. We love the Rams to come out in the winter to visit us. But, you know, it being that part of the country, I mean, that's the toughness of Buffalo. You know, a steel town, Everybody had to deal with the winters. And I was just surprised how, you know, in the winters, lived there 7 years, year round, people rallied together in the winters to help each other start cars, snowplow your driveways, you know, shovel snow to help people that might be stranded. So, you know, it just really brought people together.
Yeah. And over to Ken. Ken, when I think of your success in business, I go back to, first of all, I usually look at people's education. Ken, Georgia Tech, known for a good school. And, of course, the discipline of the NFL for all those years. You must attribute a lot of your success right now, Ken, to your days starting at Georgia Tech.
Well, you know what? I would certainly say that that's a part of it, but actually it started much sooner than then. And mm-hmm. I just have to go back to growing up in Americus, Georgia, and my dad was an entrepreneur himself. And so he had my brother and I working. And so we saw perseverance, you know, firsthand. And making a way when you didn't weren't quite sure how you're going to do things, and so that was my first exposure to, and certainly going to Georgia Tech and having that exposure kind of helped me, I guess a little bit polish a little bit better. But the work ethic came from right down there in America, Georgia, and what my dad, you know, taught us.
And to make 5 Pro Bowls, Kent, during your career between 80 and 85, it must be, of course, one of your most proud achievements. It was just automatic for you to take a flight to Hawaii after every season. But what's it like hanging out in paradise with the best football players in the world? It must be pretty cool.
You know, it really is. And, I mean, having an opportunity to go there and you know, just – guys, I mean, at the time you had kind of have an annual visit, you know, with guys like Walter Payton and stuff that were playing on other teams, you know, just great, great players and all. And to think that, wow, I got an opportunity to be here with this group of guys, you know, I give a lot of credit of that to my presence being there was the group of guys that I played with at the Rams. And, you know, coming in, I mean, we had, of course, Jackie Slater and Rich Saul and Doug Franz. And Doug Smith, I mean, just an incredible group of guys that really taught the process of playing together as an offensive line to a young player coming in. And I use even today, we work with teams about learning, you know, how to ask for help, and asking for help is not a weakness. It's an expectation when you want to be successful, and especially for others who might be depending on that success. So it's how we work together. And so that was a great thing that I learned on that offensive line, and learned it early because they were making that introduction the day you stepped in the door.
Kent, Shane, for our listeners that are interested in what you guys are doing, maybe businesses out there that want to bring you in to help them out, or for our listeners that want to follow you online and over social media, how can they do that?
You know, the easiest way, we're both a member of LinkedIn, and that's a great way to touch base with us, and we can connect and then set up a conference call and maybe have a conversation and explain how we might assist and help. So that's one way. You know, I think that would probably be the easiest. You know, we're in a unique business where a lot of our business is by word of mouth, because we get satisfied customers that have friends and they want to share that with them. And so we're busy, but that's a great way to connect. We're both on that site, and we're more than happy to take on a conversation and see if there's anything that we can do to bring and add value to that organization.
Fantastic. And of course, kentscountrycookies.com for the best cookies on the planet. Make sure you check out
that
site as well. Fellas, thank you so much for joining us again tonight. You guys are fantastic. We can't thank you enough for your friendship.
It's always a pleasure. And, you know, just in things, having Brett Favre come back to Green Bay, it's the right thing to do. And I think the NFL as a whole is looking forward to that celebration, because just, you know, Brett is a unique player, great player, and you want to see someone who did that much and has that much history to that organization, that community, be back in the fold. So I'm excited for them all.
That's fantastic stuff. Right. Shane, Ken, thank you for being a part of the show again tonight.
We appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, fellas. All the best to you and your families.
All right. Thank you.
Take care. Good night, guys.
Take care, fellas.
Good night.
Shane Nelson and Kent Hill. You're not going to find two finer gentlemen. And I love the enthusiasm, Bob. You know how much we love guys that, you know, have the great enthusiasm in their voice for what they're doing. And both of these guys have a lot of enthusiasm for the things that they're out there doing in the community.
Yeah, well, how can you get any better, Chris? They were great football players. They're very humorous, kind of easygoing guys. And, of course, a guy will bring cookies if you get together with him. So, yeah, but yeah, they're great to talk to, and what a duo! Yeah, check them out; they're great.
Absolutely right. All right, we're going to get to our next guest, who has been patiently hanging on the line, Blair Thomas, on the other side of this station identification.
Hello, everybody. Van Earl Wright here, reminding you that you're listening to Thursday Night Tailgate with the dynamic duo of Chris Mascaro and Bob Lazzari. Right here on the Armed Forces Radio Network.
Now joining us on the Kyven Foods guest line is Blair Thomas. Let me remind you about Blair's background. He's from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. He was an all-state football player at Frankfort High School. In three seasons, he rushed for nearly 4,000 yards and tied the career record for touchdowns with 59. Played his college ball at Penn State, was a part of their national championship team in 1986, and was named All-American in 1989. He is second on Penn State's all-time rushing list, just 97 yards short of Kurt Warner on that list. He was the MVP of the 1989 Holiday Bowl, setting a record with 35 carries for 186 yards. He was also the MVP of the Senior Bowl that season. He was a first-round draft pick, the number 2 overall selection by the New York Jets in 1990. He played in the league from 90 to 1995 with the Jets, Cowboys, Patriots, and Panthers. He served as a running backs coach at Temple University from 1998 to 2005. And we're very excited to have him with us tonight on Thursday Night Tailgate. Hey, Blair, Chris Mascaro and Bob Lazzari here. Thank you for being patient and joining us tonight.
No problem. No problem at all. Thanks, Chris, Bob. Thanks for having me on.
Blair, let's start out by talking about your time at Penn State. As a kid who was an all-state running back, I'm sure you had to have a lot of schools vying for your attention. What are the schools were courting you, and how did Penn State end up winning out?
Well, actually, I kind of narrowed it down real quick in the process. I knew I wanted to take my 5 visits, but I didn't want to go too far away from home. So I wound up going to Pitt, Penn State, Notre Dame, Ohio State, and Syracuse. Those are the 5 schools I selected. Actually, the first trip I went on was to Penn State, and then I went to Pitt. But I knew deep down that I was going to Penn State. I went to football camp for 2 years prior to going to college. So I was kind of familiar with the coaches. The funny thing is, when I was in 10th grade, they said I probably could start for them at defensive back, but I wanted to play offense so bad that they really didn't have much game film on me playing defense after that point. Mm-hmm. And it was funny because in my freshman class, there was 4 other running backs that came in, and all those guys was all Americans, you know, where they came from as well. So it was some tight competition. Things were a little different back then than they are now with the 85 scholarship rule. Back then you kind of had more scholarships, so some of the better teams in the country could grab a couple of extra players if they needed them.
Yeah. Blair, I mean, I'm from Pittsburgh, and to hear that Pitt was in the running and we lost out on you as a running back, that's painful because, you know, in the 85, 86, you know, that's sort of after Danny left, and boy, the program sort of went south after that. If we'd have had you for 4 years, things might have been a whole lot different than in Pitt history. So sorry to hear that.
I was a big Dan Marino, Tony Dorsett, you know,
yes,
all those guys, you know, so great player that I followed after and played against, Dan when he was still in the Dolphins.
So at Penn State, Blair, you sat behind DJ Dozier for a couple of seasons. Did that help you develop, or was it disappointing because, you know, any of those other schools, you might have been able to go in there and start right away instead of splitting time with, you know, you had several other guys you split time with or carries with for a few years. Was that okay with you, or were you disappointed by that?
Actually, it was okay with me because I was a young player coming into college. I was still 17 when I got to Penn State. I didn't play with equipment on until ninth grade, so the game was kind of still new and exciting and young for me. So I think me coming in having 2 years to, you know, understand the level of intensity that you have to play the game at was beneficial for myself. Whereas nowadays it's younger guys that are more polished, so they coming in ready to go right away. When in my case, I thought it was a great situation for me. You know, 2 years to really understand and I wasn't a great student coming out, so I needed that extra guidance and ability to really concentrate on the schoolwork in the beginning as well.
Like I mentioned in the intro, you guys won the national championship in 1986, which still stings, by the way, to several guys on that University of Miami team who we've had on this show talking about it. They still can't believe you guys won that game because how wide the disparity was in the number of yards gained by each team. The game was sort of billed as good versus evil, which I'm sure played into why you guys won, because you guys were the good and good always triumphs over evil. But take us through that game. What was it like, you know, for you watching that, you know, and being a part of that game? And then when that clock finally hit 00 and you were national champions?
Well, it all started the year prior because we played for the national championship my freshman year and we lost to Oklahoma in the Orange Bowl. And so many of those seniors on that team had extra eligibility, had a fifth year of eligibility available to them. So a lot of guys like Bob White, Shane Collin, Ray Isom, Trey Bauer, a lot of guys came back for their fifth year to want to go for another national championship. So the tone was kind of set after we lost to Oklahoma in the Orange Bowl, and we kind of dedicated ourselves to it that we were going to make sure, you know, we stuck together as a team, and we knew we wasn't the flashy team, you know, offensively speaking, but we also knew that defense won championships. So we as an offense really had to do our part and really make sure that the point spread was, you know, in our favor, because we knew our defense, you know, gave up very little points. And I talked to Trey Bauer just a couple weeks ago, and he had told me some numbers that was astounding of, you know, what they gave up defensively. So we knew we had a great defense coming back. And, you know, John Schaefer was a quarterback that knew how to manage the game. He wasn't going to throw it away or give it away. I think he only lost one game in his career as a starting quarterback, and that was in the Orange Bowl the previous year. So as a starter, we knew we had a guy on offense that could handle us. We had great leadership in DJ, you know, the receivers that we had. We just had a great team. We had, you know, everybody talk about DJ, but we also had Tim Manoa and Steve Smith, who went in the second round, you know, right after each other by Dallas and I think the Raiders. So it was, we had, you know, some offensive linemen, and Steve Wisniewski, who played, you know, a gazillion years with the Raiders. So we had some good talent, and we always knew that we had to stick together as a team. I think the year that we lost the national championship, staff was really uptight. It was really strict on a lot of things. When we came back to play Miami, it seemed like they were more relaxed, even though it was the hype good versus evil, you know, number one versus number two, you know, the duel in the desert. They were still more relaxed, and I think we played, you know, a lot better being more relaxed than we did the previous year when, you know, it seemed like the coaching staff was a little uptight. But we pulled it out.
All right. Bob, questions for Blair?
Yeah, good evening, Blair. I've always been under the impression, and I'll believe it till the day I leave this earth, Blair, that Joe Paterno was probably one of the best coaches in any sport, in any era, of any type of team. And I'm sure you entered Penn State out of Frankfort High School, and you were an adult at the time, but we've talked to Penn State guys who give so much credit to him for their development as a man as they went through life. Just tell us quickly what Coach Paterno meant to you while you were at Penn State.
Oh, my father passed away my junior year up there, so if there was anything I needed, you know, dealing with on some personal matters or something I needed some guidance on, he was the guy that I went to. He has molded so many great men and so many of us alum that played for him. You know, we get together and we just laugh and joke and say so many things that we have, you know, got from Joe. You know, speed of the leaders, speed of the troops, you know, some of the things that we've learned. And, you know, the one good thing about Joe is, he was a student of the game. Even after I got finished playing and I was coaching, I would go see him down in Avalon over the summer, and he's in there handwriting letters to recruits that he can't send out until September. So that's how much the game of football meant to Joe Paterno, is that he never rest from the game. He was always into the game. And trying to make sure that, you know, guys did things for the right reason. And later in his life, you know, he would do things to make sure that he was instilling good fundamentals and good life skills in people, because he would sit some players and you know, wouldn't play players, you know, just to prove a point when everybody thought, you know, it was just about winning for Joe. And Joe was more of a guy that wanted to make sure he groomed great men that's going to go on to make a difference in this world, not just, you know, football players. So he made sure that, you know, he had, you know, GAs doing study hall check, and he's always walking through campus, you know, making sure guys are going to school and going to class. And, you know, those are the things that stand out the most, is that he wanted to make sure that the guys that he developed were guys that was going to go out and do positive things in the world.
Blair, I was following the Jets very closely in the early 90s, and I probably saw you play down at Giant Stadium a few times. And I was always surprised. I know Freeman McNeil was there at the time, but he was kind of had his best years were definitely behind him. But he was an incredible running back when he was in his prime, for sure. But
yes,
I just
yes.
never thought that you were given the ball enough. I mean, you averaged almost 4.5 yards when you got the rock for the Jets. Was it the Coslet offense, or was it just the type of team it was where it you couldn't get those 20, 25 carries a game?
Well, I think it was the philosophy of Bruce Coslet at the time. You know, I think it was a curse that I became a good blocker, or I focused on that part of my game, because, in my opinion, it seemed like I did more blocking than carrying the ball. When I, you know, you think you would bring somebody in that high, you would want to at least give them the ball 20, 25 times a game, which that's what I normally got it in college. That was a time of my life where, you know, I did have some injuries, and I can say the Meadowlands, that field wasn't, you know, generous to me. I used to have to sometimes take 3 Advils just to get through warm-ups, because my knees would just bother me, or my lower back. I never felt, you know, like I did in college playing on that turf. It just wasn't good for me.
And Blair, to that end, right? You know, mm-hmm. when you were the second overall pick in 1990, and people, when they, you know, some people look at your career and wonder, you know, kind of, you know, what happened here. And to Bob's point, you know, you weren't ever given the ball enough to get yourself going. Like, you know, like Bob, you know, said, I mean, there were four times I was about four times in your career when you got the ball 20 plus times in a game. And in those four times, you had 405 yards and you averaged 4.5 yards a carry. Do you feel like you got cheated or robbed or something, whether it was by the turf or the coaching staffs or the way they used you, that, you know, kind of sold you short over the course of your career?
You know what? You can easily look for reasons and look for complaints, but those are life experiences. And I think, you know, we're given things and challenges to see how we're going to react. And, you know, I just have to take that as the hand that was dealt to me, and I had to play that hand, and I'm still playing that hand. So I got to look for the positives and everything. And, you know, one thing Joe always told us, you can't quit no matter what it is in life that you're doing. You don't fail until you quit trying. So, you know, I the game of football has been great for me. So I give back, you know, in coaching kids. I coached at Temple University for 8 years. I used to coach with an organization called Junior Ranks Football University. Now I'm doing my own camps. I have one coming up June 20th in the Lewistown area. So I'm finding ways to give back, you know, to young players in the game. I have a topical aches and pain product that's I swear by. I wish I had the product when I was playing. You know, maybe I could have endured some of the turf that I played on at that time. I wish the turf was the same turf that they're using today when I was playing. Maybe I could have squeaked out a couple more years. Who knows? But I'm very excited where I'm at in my life, and you know, just trying to stay positive and make good things happen, and be thankful and blessed that I'm here to tell this story.
That's fantastic, Blair. Before we let you go, like, you know, plug what you got. You talked about the topical ache and pain product. You know, talk about what's the name of the product, where can people find it, and plus the camp that you're doing on June 20th for folks that want to participate.
Yes, the name of the product is Immortal Magnesium Therapy, or EMT for short. The product is a magnesium sulfate-based product. A lot of people are walking around magnesium deficient. A lot of athletes are mainly magnesium deficient because of the sweating that they do, and then compound that on with the amount of processed foods that people are eating. They're not getting the proper nutrients in their body. So if you don't have a certain level of magnesium in your body is not going to absorb the calcium, the potassium, the zinc, all those other nutrients that you need. So, you know, and going through some health issues myself, I kind of read up on some things, and, you know, a friend of mine is a chemist that came up with a formula for me that we use that's, It's outstanding. I was told that I need a shoulder replacement. We have the product in a crystal form as well, where you can soak in a tub. I soaked, you know, about an hour each night for about 2 weeks, and the range of motion in my shoulder increased. I talked to a doctor that read a book, Dr. Carolyn Dean. She wrote the book, The Magnesium Miracle, and I was explaining to her I was getting greater range of motion. She was like, I'm not surprised, because what magnesium does, just like milk and magnesium, it rids your body of the impurities that you have. So calcium deposits form, and there's this form of calcium that the magnesium will slowly break down, and you will get better range of motion in some of those joints. The good thing about the spray that we have is that it's topical. People are on the go so much that they don't have time to soak. So now you can target the area that's giving you problems, whether it's a shoulder, a knee, an elbow, a foot or ankle, Achilles, no matter what it is, a hamstring, you can target that area. And magnesium has already been proven to be transdermal, so it's going to penetrate the skin and give your body the nutrients that it needs right there at that spot. Then I'll, so you can get that product at getemt.com. So they have it in the 2 and 4 ounce sizes. And then I do a internet television show called Nittany Sports Huddle with a teammate of mine, Quintus McDonald. We ran a fishing show this weekend at Kiss Creek. There's a golf fishing tournament out there that we're going to cover, doing some community service things. And I do some, we got some, make sure people are drinking proper water. We got the Zuma water. So I'm in the health field as well, and entrepreneur, just trying to give back to the game of football, and hopefully can help some young kids, you know, fulfill some of their goals and dreams.
That's fantastic. Blair, thank you so much for taking time out of your night to be a part of the show. You're great. We hope you'll come back and do it again sometime. We'd love to have you join us and share some more of your thoughts and insights on what's going on in and out of the NFL.
Yes, I would love to come back on, time permitting.
All right, fantastic. Thank you, Blair. All the best to you and your family. We look to catching up soon.
Okay, thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Good night.
Bye-bye. Blair Thomas, again, getemt.com for that topical product. I may have to give that a shot, Bob.
Oh,
you and I both struggle a little bit in that area.
I'm just going to send the tub up here. You know, I'll take as much as you could get. I'll do any kind of testing for him. But, yeah, it's a very enterprising man, very well-schooled man, and it shows.
Yeah, absolutely right. All right, we've got our next guest hanging on the Kaivin Foods guest line, and that's Chris Borland. Let me give you some background on Chris. He's from Kettering, Ohio. He attended Archbishop Alter High School and was a first-team All-State All-Conference Player of the Year. He was the team captain and MVP. He lettered in football, track, basketball, and tennis. As a senior, he had 72 tackles, one interception, and one forced fumble, and two fumble recoveries on defense. And on offense, just to add insult to injury to the teams he played against, he rushed for 1,230 yards and scored 19 touchdowns. In track, he was one of the top performers in shot put. Played his college ball at Wisconsin, again, second Badger of the night, where he was the Big Ten Freshman of the Year in 2009. He was named first team All-Big Ten in 2012. In 2013, he was named Big Ten Defensive Player of the Year and a first team All-American. He was a third-round draft pick by the 49ers in 2014 and was named NFL Rookie of the Week after his Week 10 performance against the Saints. The following week, he was named NFC Defensive Player of the Week for his performance against the Giants. He was named to the NFL's Rookie of the Month team in November. And after all of that, he walked away from the game, retiring back on March 16th. Why? Let's find out. Hey, Chris Mascaro and Bob Lazzari here. Thanks for joining us on Thursday Night Tailgate.
Hey, Chris. Hey, Bob. Thanks a lot for having me.
So Chris, I know you've been asked this question a million times over the last couple of months, but for our audience, what makes a guy who had such a tremendous football career, both in high school and college, and to start to your pro career last year, suddenly decide to walk away?
The short of it, I think, is a fear of neurological diseases from repetitive head trauma. Getting deeper into it, I think there's been a number of studies that have shown, the NFL study included, that have shown that a lot of guys tend to suffer from the consequences of hitting your head a lot, basically. So I decided not to go down that road, and I may be wrong. I hope I am. But, you know, for me and the way I played and having already played for 10 years, I think I just wanted to remove myself from the risk.
Was there a time or a moment, whether it was on the field or, you know, in a hotel room or at camp or what have you, when you sat back and that thought, you know, hit you, you know, like, why do I keep doing this?
Yeah, I think there was, it wasn't as if there was a moment where all of a sudden I decided. I think that would be nonsensical, but in camp, sustained a mild concussion that I played through because at the time, hadn't yet made the team, hadn't yet won a starting position, which was what I was vying for. After I got that concussion, I think the timing was really important. We hadn't played a regular season game yet. Technically, in my mind, I wasn't in the NFL. And I was already sacrificing my health for my sport, for my profession, for my job. So it changed the way I approached things. It wasn't just a risk. It wasn't just something that could happen. I was actively participating in my own demise, in my opinion. And so I, you know, players are highly disincentivized to report concussions. And, you know, I'm example 1A. I didn't report the concussion I had in camp. And I have failed to report others. So I didn't want to keep doing that. And I just researched more, read more about it. And as the season progressed, it gained steam. So I don't think there was one moment there where I just decided. That concussion in camp changed the way I approached it.
So, Chris, you know, I mean, the league is, you know, changing rules and protocols for how they deal with concussions in hopes of making the game safer. But is there anything the league could ever do to make a sport where, you know, a 260-pound fullback is coming full steam at a linebacker to block him? I'm not sure there's anything you can really do to ever make the game safe. Is there?
No. I mean, that's football, and it's not to say they haven't had efforts to make it safer. I think some of the targeting rules and limited hitting in practice are good measures, but no, inherent to the game is violence and is collisions. And you know that going in. I mean, you understand. Blair was talking about his knees, and he's selling a topical magnesium-based ointment to help, you know, people with pain from playing on turf or playing fullback or running back. I mean, it's a dangerous game, and it's physical and it's violent, and everybody understands that. What I learned, chronic traumatic encephalopathy, there's a brain disease unique to football. And there's, at this point, there's still more questions than there are answers. But for me, from what I learned, just didn't want to have to risk it. And hopefully I made the decision early enough where I can live a long, healthy life. And again, if I'm wrong, I'd be thrilled. I can regret not playing for longer, but I can't regret for playing too long.
All right. Bob, questions for Chris?
Yeah, Chris, I can't respect you enough for that kind of decision. I think a lot of misinformation was out there in the fact that I think people thought that you got out of the game before you'd ever get concussions. I remember reading an ESPN article where you already had a couple concussions while playing soccer and then another one in high school, and of course you talked about one already. So this isn't something that was totally preventive. So, I mean, having had two or three diagnosed myself, Chris, and I'm twice your age, it's kind of a no-brainer to me, but you probably got out at the right time, even though it was after 1 year.
Yeah, I mean, I'm hoping it's preventative. I did speak with a neurologist shortly before retiring who said there is a chance that I've already done damage. And I'm sure, you know, I played 10 years of football. I played through a lot of dings or basically concussions. Not severe, but, you know, you get dazed, you get maybe nauseous. Played through a number of those in college and maybe a couple in high school and definitely last year in the NFL. So it's part of the game. It's part of the position of linebacker. Yeah, I hope I was proactive, but to say that at the onset of an NFL career, by the time you get there, I'm sure you've already been through some stuff, especially as a linebacker.
And Chris, I remember watching the Giant game in week 11 this past season. And well, that's one organization who's not sad to see you retire because you were incredible. You had I think you won the Defensive Player of the Week that week. You were all over the field. You reminded me of Clay Matthews Jr. And guys like Urlacher and everything. I was just wondering, who were some of the guys you looked up to when you were maybe in your teens, linebacker or defensive players?
Well, I played primarily offense. I know I made You mentioned in the introduction that I played some defense in high school, and I did, but I was primarily a running back. Started football in ninth grade, so I was always a huge Green Bay Packers fan and loved Brett Favre. So he was the guy for me. He's the reason I wore number 4 in high school, and loved how tough he was and how good of a teammate and how much fun he had playing. So he was my hero. He was my guy. But on the defensive side of the ball, I'd say, you know, even though he played a different position, Troy Polamalu comes to mind, Chris Spielman, Zach Thomas, guys like that.
Chris, let's talk a little bit about your playing career. You played one season with Russell Wilson at Wisconsin. What was it like for you trying to chase down Russell in practice?
You know, it was difficult. It was fun too. Russell's a competitive guy. He's pretty buttoned up off the field, but he's a great competitor. So I think we made a bet, you know, my sophomore year. I'm safe to say this now because, you know, we can't get Mark Emmerich not listening, or maybe he is. It's not financial, Mark, so you can't suspend us any longer. No, we made a bet. We used to do 7-on-7 to close out practice, I believe, on Wednesdays. And, you know, if the offense scored a touchdown, Russell got to use my scooter. And if I picked him off, I got to use, like, his Lexus. I don't know if it was a G-Wag, but it was a nice freaking car. And so I picked him off a couple
Lexus
times.
Lexus in college. Nice, Russell.
Yeah, I think Russell, you know, he was doing okay. Not, you know, just from where he grew up. But,
of course it was. Don't be silly.
No, it was.
I'm sure.
Yes, I haven't talked to him, but he owes me. The plan was I get a couple dates where I get to use his car, so I might wait till he signs his next contract to get him on that bet.
You got to play against him twice last season. You had 19 tackles in those two games. Well, you're hoping to get one shot, maybe bragging rights. You know, sack him in the backfield or something.
Yeah, it would have been. It would have been nice. I only played half of our second game. I sprained my ankle and Russell blew me up. So he got the best of me.
Chris, looking back over your time at Wisconsin, you know, the Rose Bowl and Ohio State were not kind to you guys. So I'm guessing you were rooting for Oregon in the national championship game last season.
Oh, I really didn't have a horse in the race. I would like to see the Big Ten do well, but, you know,
can you root
really
for them? Can you root for someone else? Could you root for Ohio State?
No, I don't. I don't root for Ohio State.
Yeah.
But you know, to be frank with you, I didn't really care who won. I don't know. I thought we played them okay in college. They won 3 of 4, but we beat them when they were number one, and we pretty much gift wrapped the other one that we lost. So I don't know. I'm still competitive about those losses.
I'm sure. In the bowl system, and we're getting a little bit better now and we're starting to have a bit of a playoff season, but still, the way the college football season is structured, Chris, is it hard to regain your momentum as a team and get back up for a bowl game after you've had like nearly a month off in between the end of the regular season and the bowl game?
Yeah, I mean, it is difficult. And it's for these kids, I mean, it's they sacrifice their winter break free of pay to make these bowls millions of dollars. So it is it's tough. You know, it's tough for the guys and they're away from their families. I haven't celebrated Christmas with my family since high school. And all of college football players who play in good programs do the same thing for the most part. So,
Wow. Yeah,
it's a difficult time of year for the players and with finals and then sacrificing your winter break and then the layoff too. So yeah, I think some kids probably struggle for getting up for games, but I never thought that was a problem with us at Wisconsin.
Bob, one more for Chris before we let him go.
Sure, Chris. In the 1 year in San Francisco, we had the chance to play with Coach Harbaugh. I met Jim when he was coaching the University of San Diego. They came here to play Yale years ago and got to talk to him a little bit. Very pleasant guy, but we know he's a very intense guy in the locker room. And, of course, you played for Vic Fangio, who's moved on to the Bears. Your just comments on that coaching staff and the 1 year you spent there, their tutelage.
Well, I love my time under Coach Harbaugh and Vic. I think, Harbaugh, competitive guys love to play for him because he's a winner and he'll push you really hard, but hopefully you're on the same page with wanting to go that hard. I think he's actually more of a player's coach than he gets credited for. As far as Vic, you know, Vic's just a brilliant guy. I think he's one of the best minds I've ever seen in football, and he's he puts his players in positions to make plays unlike any other coordinator I've been around. So his system was great. And Vic was all business. So it was, he would design and orchestrate these masterful plans. And all you had to do on Sunday was go out and execute.
Chris, I had heard that you had majored in history at Wisconsin. So I've also heard you say you may want to go back to school. What's next for you?
Well, I'm in the process of figuring that out. I'm hearing someone speak right now. So I'm in the hallway, Jack Welch, the former CEO of GE. So
wow.
I'm I'm making the rounds. I'm trying to figure out, you know, business, academics, philanthropy, advocacy. I don't know. There's been a lot of things thrown my way, and I'm just sorting it out. But it's been fun. It's been exciting.
Good for you. Chris, thank you so much for being a part of the show tonight. It was great having you here with us. We hope you'll come back and update us again, you know, once you've decided what you want to do next, and maybe share some thoughts and insights to what's going on with your Wisconsin Badgers and around the NFL. We'd love to have you.
Well, sounds great. Thanks again for your time, guys, and take care.
All right. Thank All you. The best to you and your family, Chris. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Chris Borland, I tell you, Bob, you know, is it, you know, a courageous decision to walk away? I don't know if it's a courageous one, if it's a smart one, but certainly a kid that's, you know, got a lot going for him. And we certainly look forward to finding out what it is he does next.
Fascinating story, Chris. And we've had guys on over the last, couple years that we've mentioned the concussion syndrome too.
Right.
And it's almost as if, Chris, it's kind of turning now. How many guys have we had on, former players, that would said they would think twice about letting their kids play? And there's some on the other, totally end of this, the other fence. It's if you like the game enough, you're going to pay the price. It's a very fine line, but he's doing what's best for him, and no one could argue that. He's turned down a lot of money to have his health, and
that's exactly right.
We all can learn from that, right?
Right. All right, we've got our next guest, Kerry Glenn, hanging on the line. We're going to get to Kerry on the other side of these words from our friends over at Kyven Foods and Coastal Orthopedics.
This is Reggie Kelly, former Cincinnati Bengals and Atlanta Falcon tight end, and I'm the owner of Kyven Foods. And if you enjoy delicious food, you're going to love my Kyven products, which consists of our honey apple salsa, sweet barbecue sauce, and an array of seasonings. For store locations, online orders, and recipes, check out our website at www.kyven82.com. That's KYVAN82.com. One taste, and you'll appreciate the goodness.
Are you suffering from chronic pain in your shoulders, hips, knees, or wrists? Tired of living life with an old injury that just won't go away? If you answered yes to either of these questions, we can help. At Coastal Orthopedics and Sports Medicine, Dr. Candelora and his fine staff of medical professionals will get you back on the road to recovery. Their state-of-the-art facility and attention to detail will ensure you will be enjoying life again and feeling invincible in no time. Since 1991, Dr. Candelora and Coastal Orthopedics have been specializing in joint replacement, arthritis, and osteoporosis care, as well as pediatric and adult general orthopedics. Visit us on the web, www.bone-dr.com, or call our Newport Richey office just north of Tampa at 727-848-1417. Proud sponsors of Mike Ditka's The Gridiron Greats Assistance Fund.
Hey, hey, welcome back. This is Todd Washington, two-time Super Bowl champ, offensive line coach for the Baltimore Ravens, and you are listening to Thursday Night Tailgate with my boys Chris Moscato and Bob Lazzari on the Armed Forces Radio Network. Go get them, guys.
I also want to give a shout-out to our good friend Renee Schull at Integrated Play. If you're either already in job transition or you really want to be in job transition, go to integratedplay.org online and see what Renee can do to help you. We all like to do business and take advice from someone who we can actually trust and who actually has our best interests at heart. Well, you're not going to find someone who fits that description any better than Renee Schull at Integrated Play. She's smart, she's talented, and the kind of person you want to work with and have working for you. She is doing great things for some of our guests who are in transition from being pro athletes and are now getting into the job market. I'm telling you, folks, there just isn't a better way to describe Renee than to tell you she's simply fantastic. If you're an athlete or anyone in the job market, do yourself a favor and reach out to Renee. You're going to be very glad you did. Go to integratedplay.org online and give her a follow on Twitter at integratedplay. All right, now joining us on the Kyven Foods guest line is Kerry Glenn. Kerry's become an outstanding friend of the show. He's always got some very passionate opinions to share with us, which is one of the many reasons why we enjoy having him as part of the show. Let me remind you about Kerry's background. He's from East St. Louis, Illinois. He was a 10th round draft pick by the New York Jets in 1985 out of the University of Minnesota. He played in the NFL from 1985 to 1992 for the Jets and the Dolphins. He was selected as an alternate for the 1990 Pro Bowl team for his special teams play after leading the Dolphins in special teams tackles. Over the course of his career, he played in 74 games, had 7 interceptions, 2 of which he returned for touchdowns, and he had 2 sacks. And we are certainly glad to have him back tonight with us on Thursday Night Tailgate. Hey, Kerry, Chris, hey, and Bob, Chris. Thanks for being here.
What's going on, guys? How you guys doing?
Oh, fantastic. So, Kerry, first of all, congratulations. I saw you became a grandfather last month. How's your grandbaby?
Yes. It's wonderful. It's, like I told my son, you know, one of the funniest things, you know, I told my son this story. So, you know, when you were born, you know, your mom came home from the hospital and, you know, we took pictures, you know, just right after she had you, and your mom put the pictures on the refrigerator. I come home and I see the picture on the refrigerator. Next day, refrigerator. And the next day, I take them off. And then I told my son, I said, I just want to remind you, give your son a month and he's going to look a lot better than he did the first day. and he was like, I was over there the other day and he was like, Dad, he looks really good now. I said, yes, yeah. You know, he hadn't just came out of the cooker. You know, he's looking much better now. Yeah, but yes, it's really nice being a grandfather, and it's good. So I'm enjoying him, and it's making me feel like I'm old.
That's great stuff, Kerry. Your two former teams, the Jets and Dolphins, are playing next season over in London in Week 4. And in conjunction with that, you and some of the Dolphin alumni players are squaring off against some of the Jet alumni players in a charity golf event. So I'm curious, is there going to be an official walking with you guys so there's no sort of quote-unquote accidental shanks or accidentally walking in someone's line on the green? I mean, how heated could this golf event get?
It can get pretty heated, so I just want to let some of those guys know that. So it's gonna be, see me. It's not gonna. It would never be heated for me because I'm gonna have on a jersey. It's gonna be, you know, have Dolphins and have Jets. So
so
me, I get the pass. Some of these guys, they don't get the pass like me.
So Kerry, both teams had a very active offseason. Which team do you think is in the best position now to challenge the Patriots in the AFC East?
It's going to be interesting. But I think, the Jets, I mean, they upgraded, you know, they upgraded on their defense. With a few rookies, and Dom Casui with the Dolphins, and the Dolphins.
Right.
To be honest, I'm just going to tell you, it's going to be a toss up. I have one of my friends, her son. This kid is very bright, very very bright, and he's and each and every year we pick our Super Bowl picks. You know, of course, I won last year. I chose New England. This year, my pick, who I have to win the Super Bowl, maybe it shocked you guys. I picked Seattle, and my friend, son, chose Miami.
Wow!
I told him. I said, "You're taking a big step there, right?"
Yeah. Right.
I know Miami's going to be good. You know, and I think the key to it is going to be Tannehill. The key to it is going to be Tannehill and his receivers. I mean, Tannehill. You know, when you look at it, I mean, he had a real good year last year, and you know the only thing with Tannehill about playing in Miami, you know, Miami's gonna always be Dan Marino, and people always have to, you know, no matter what quarterback comes through Miami, they'll all be measured up to Dan Marino, which is that's pretty high, you know,
And but even though Tannehill had a good year, it was better than last year, the previous year, and he had a real good year. People are just not really, looking. And I'm trying to be optimistic about it. I'm trying to just look at it. I look at the stats. I look at what he did last year, and then I look at what he has to be next year, in order to be successful. He got to do better. He got to improve each and every year. The comment, but I think personally, I just think if Tannehill have a good year, I think it's going to be the Dolphins. He's a real big key. When you get on the Jets side, the Todd Bowles, what is he going to do with that offense?
And that's right.
That's going to be a key. What he's going to do with Geno Smith,
right.
What type of Geno Smith are you going to get? Are you going to get an improved Geno Smith? That's the only thing. That's the only thing that with the Jets, that's why I don't quite see the Jets getting there. But it's going to be interesting. I will probably give it a toss up.
You mentioned Ndamukong Suh a moment ago. Is he one of those players you hate, unless, of course, he's playing on your team?
Yeah. Oh, heck yeah. He can change the game. He can change the game at any moment. I just think that, when the Dolphins got him, I'm just like, hey, great move. It was great. They upgraded on that defensive line. He makes some big difference in the game. When you got to double team him, and that opens up so much more for the Dolphins. But like I said, it depends on Tannehill's year, what he's going to do, and how he's throwing the ball in his receivers. The receiving crew, that's the part right there. I'm a little big, when I see their receivers, I thought they should have went out and got some veteran receivers and brought them in. But unfortunately, they didn't go out and get some of the well-known names,
right?
Play. But we'll see what happens.
Bob, questions for Kerry?
Yeah, Kerry, it's always an honor to speak with you. I think the last time we spoke, we discussed your upbringing in East St. Louis, Illinois, and you were from very humble beginnings, Kerry. And now having a grandchild now, it probably gives you a new viewpoint as far as how to keep kids on track. I know you had associates as a kid who probably went down the wrong path, and something kept you on the right path. But does having a new grandchild give you a new outlook on this whole thing of maybe trying to keep kids on the right path and talking to them?
I've listened to some of what you guys, when you were talking to Chris Boone. And I respect his decision to not play. Personally, my son, he played football and he played baseball. My son was an excellent baseball player. He just decided he just didn't want to do sports anymore. That's the only thing. But the sport that, and this is, my son is 26, and, this is when he was up. I wanted my son to play baseball. Did I want him to play football? No, I didn't want him to play football. So, I clearly understand, Chris Boylan's point of view. I respect it. Chris, I watched him in college. I spent, four months in Florida, and then I spent the rest of the time in Wisconsin. And, plus my girlfriend, she's a huge Badger fan. She got to bring out the big Badger flag and everything. Chris, I want you to know, I'm a fan of Chris Boylan. I'm just not a fan of the Badgers because I'm a Gopher. So I just want to let you know that. I respect what he, and I'm with my grandson. I'm a T-ball. I'm gonna be there taking him to T-ball. My son wants to do it. I take him. And I would rather he play baseball than football. I'd rather see my grandson get $200 million in baseball, $25 million in football or whatever the case may be. Mm-hmm. But I'm a firm believer in it, and because football, when you look at the sport, it was the right thing for me to do at that time, and that's what I wanted to do. When you have choices and you can help, guide your kid in the right direction, and I'm gonna make sure that my and everything else. And so it's just one of those things where you just want to, you see your kid, you want to take care of them, because they knew about the concussion a long time ago. That's not, they knew about it. That was something that I did it, and it's over. And I just like to, tell him Chris Borden. I mean, he's doing right thing. He's doing it for him. I can never tell another man, oh, you should go ahead and do this, because you're not walking in that man's shoes. And people may say, I don't know why he walked away from millions of dollars. Well, the reason why he walked away from millions of dollars is because that was his decision, and he felt that was what's best for him and his family.
And we talked earlier, Kerry, to Blair Thomas, who played on the same field you did back at Giant Stadium in the 80s, and he's telling us about how bad the turf was. What do you remember about the turf, and was it good to finally get to Miami as your home field?
Well, I always loved playing in Miami. It was always, I loved it. The only part that I hated coming down here, I love coming down to my in September. When we come down in November, and we're practicing in the cold weather, and then you go down to Miami and you run 10 yards. It felt like you ran, like 100 yards, because you're breathing, that's the only thing that I used to hear Daniel used to tell us. Oh, make sure you drink a lot of Gatorade so you won't cramp up. And the Miami weather used to kill us. When we come down, and it used to kill me when I come down in that warm weather. But the turf. I didn't have a problem with it. The turf in Giant Stadium. But I've seen some. I don't know. I've seen some bad places though. Philly had them double heads. They go out there with a first base was, and they had it. And it had a piece over it. You could see it. The turf in Giant Stadium, it was seamless. It was nothing like Philly. Philly was the worst field I've ever been on. It was totally uneven. To be honest with you, it was unsafe. The Philly stadium. I've never been in anything like that in my life. I think Philly had the worst stadium. But if you compare Giant Stadium to turf to Philly, it's not Giant Stadium all the way. It was some people just didn't like turf. I didn't mind, whatever. My preference was coming down to Miami. I love playing on the grass.
Yeah, Kerry. What do you make of this whole Deflategate issue? Is it a big deal?
Come on, that's just not a secret. But come on, this is something that's been going. That's been going on for years in football. The quarterback tells the equipment manager. He wants the ball right there. The equipment manager takes the ball to the quarterback, and he says, trust me, I've seen that over and over. And I know for a fact that they do that. But the fact is that Brady should, I think Brady probably got two games. Brady should just stand around and say, listen, I did it. And I didn't know I was going that much over, but yeah, I did. Just confess,
right?
Confess and just live up to it. I think they probably gave him Troy Benson would probably gave him two games because he was like this here. He's fucking Troy Benson, and I played Troy, and Troy knows. You're not pulling the wool over Troy's eyes. Troy knows what quarterbacks do. His whole career is around Dan Marino. Troy knows that.
I just think that he should have just came up front and just said, hey, you know, this is, you know, yeah, I did it. I think the person really getting the short end of it is the equipment manager. I mean, you're looking at a guy probably making $50,000 a year, and this guy's getting suspended. You know, Brady's making what, $15 million or more than that. You know, he's making much money, and you know, and he's going to lose what, $4 million, whatever the case may be. That, I mean, or $2 million. That's nothing. That's a drop in the bucket to him. But when you're looking at an equipment guy, they're making $60,000, you know, $67,000, and he got to take care of his family. You know, that's a huge difference there. I think he's getting the short end of the stick. He shouldn't be getting suspended, you know, for his actions, because he's only doing what Brady want him to do. there's no way that he could get out of doing what he did because Brady is, you know, he's a quarterback. And the bottom line to it, guys, it happened all over the league. Everybody over the league, they do the same thing. And Brady should just fessed up to it, took a fine, did two games and took a fine or whatever the case may be, call it a day.
Right. And that's, you know, something Bob talked about at the beginning of the show. Boy, you know, if he only had done that, this whole thing probably blows over and it's news for one day and not news for many days.
Yeah, it'd have been yesterday's news. Clearly, right. It'd have been yesterday's news if he had just said, I did it. Okay, let's go for it. And now he's trying to appeal. He's trying to appeal this and to appeal this. I mean, what is going to show? And then when you look at the guy he had in his phone, Deflator, Naver, or whatever he had in his phone. It's just ridiculous for Brady to even try to fight this thing. Just go ahead and take the punishment and call it a day. You know,
Gary,
need to help that equipment manager out.
They have people marching up here, Kerry, in New England, and trying to pay the Patriots fine. It's crazy.
Really?
Yeah, it's crazy.
Why do Patriots fine? They got money. Bob Crane got money. I mean, come on, really? They're gonna pay $1 million. They don't want Bob Crane to do that. That's a drop in the bucket for him.
Right. Yep.
Well, you know. Well, I tell you what. Okay, if they raise $1 million, what he better do? He better drop the ticket prices.
Right. That's right.
That's exactly right.
You can't get something for nothing.
Right.
He better drop the ticket prices. I mean, I just think that, you know, like I said, this whole thing that Brady could have ended the whole thing, and you know when he was when I saw him. When the press conference, when he came out and they went through the investigation, and he said, no, you know, I didn't do anything wrong, you know. And I mean, you know, and I know Belichick. See, Belichick, the bottom line is this way. He's a head coach. You know, he don't know that. I mean, when somebody I know did it, you know, when they ball, whatever.
Right.
They didn't tell the head coach. I mean, the head coach. It was just done between that person and the trainer.
Right.
You know, so it's just one of those things. I just hope, you know, I hope the whole thing is good. Because, and another thing too, due to the fact that you look at, there's been so much happening with the Patriots over the years, you know, and it's, you know, with the spying and all that stuff. You know, on other teams, different teams, you know, when they're playing, you know, when they're playing. There's been so much with New England. That's why this whole thing has been just been, I mean, with the fine that Troy imposed on them so big because of just what's been happening. And you know, right now they're just looking at, you know, we're going to hit Brady and the Patriots with these fines. I mean, you're looking at $1 million fine and you're looking at the first round and this year and the fourth round and next year, that is just something that that's something that's a stiff penalty. It is, but you know, hey, sure, that's what he's there for.
There you go. Kerry, thank you so much for taking time out of your night to be a part of the show. Again, congratulations on being a grandfather. Let our listeners know, how can they follow you on social media?
Oh yeah, I mainly do a lot of Facebook. I'm on Twitter too, but Kerry Glenn. You know, if you see me, I have my uniform on. But there's two Kerry Glenns. I have me and my son. But you can go on Facebook. And I just put in my name, Kerry Glenn, and you'll see a lot of the things that I'm doing. And right now, I'm in Orlando right now. I'm doing a golf tournament for a friend of mine, him and his wife. And so I'm here to help them out and to support them. So it's we have a little golf tournament. On Saturday, so it's gonna be nice. You know, a lot of people coming in town today and tomorrow, and then we have a parent party tomorrow. So it's gonna be Walter Briggs. It's gonna be a good thing for him tomorrow.
Good for him. Good for you. Thank you again, Kerry. Best of luck to everyone in your family, to the little grandbaby, and we look forward to hopefully catching up with you again real soon.
Yeah, and I love being on you guys' show. All right. Thank you, guys. You have a good one.
All right. Take care, Kerry. Thanks.
Okay. Bye. All
right. Kerry Glenn, new grandfather. Great stuff, Bob.
Yeah, he's a busy guy, and, he's always a pleasure to speak with Chris. And, any new grandfather is welcome on the show. He's got his hands full.
That's right. All right, my friend, it's time for us to put a bow on this one. Great job out of you, as always. Always a pleasure to share the airways with you for a couple hours, my friend.
Same here. A lot of fun, Chris.
All right, next week, who's going to join us? Well, you know, we got a great lineup set up for you next week. A TNT rookie, a guy I was thrilled to talk to a couple of weeks ago. He was a kicker in the league for 17 seasons, former Steelers, Browns, Giants, and Patriots kicker, Matt Barr. Will join us. Very excited to get to talk with Matt. Former Broncos, Giants, and Falcons head coach Dan Reeves will be back with us. Former Chiefs and Bucks defensive back Charles Mincy will also be making his TNT debut. Former Heisman Trophy winner Johnny Rogers will be here. That should be some great stories. And then we'll round out the show with our good friend and super agent Lee Steinberg, having Lee back with us. Always great talking to Lee Steinberg. Plus, we'll have our weekly regular 12th man segment with David Meltzer. So, folks, it's going to, you know, it just doesn't get much better than that. So it's going to be a great show. We hope you'll come back and be a part of it with us. Want to remind everyone how they can follow us on social media. I am at CT Mascaro on Twitter. Bob is at Bob_Lazzari. So at Bob_Lazzari. The show is at TNT Podcast. Plus, also, please check us out on Facebook. Give our Thursday Night Tailgate page a like. That's important to us, too. Plus, you can stay up to date with who our future guests are going to be. You can stream or download any of our archive episodes by going to our website, ThursdayNightTailgate.com. Bob, take us home, my friend.
All right. Thank you, Chris. And many thanks go out to our announcer, Joe Lajanusa, for the great job he does with our weekly intro and ads, and to Kyle Turley, Tim Pickett, and all our friends over at Gridiron Records for their partnership and our upcoming outro music. On behalf of myself and Chris, we thank everyone out there for listening tonight. We appreciate you the most. Until next week, everyone, good night, Kevin. Keep fighting.
Coming down the mountain, I take a breath of sin. Can't tell the day or time, but I know this day will.